two others, who were criminals, were led away to be put to death with him. And when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. And Jesus said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And they cast lots to divide his garments. And the people stood by, watching. But the rulers scoffed at him, saying, He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one. The soldiers also mocked him, coming up and offering him sour wine, and saying, If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself. There was also an inscription over him, This is the King of the Jews. One of the criminals who were hanged railed at him, saying, Are you not the Christ? Save yourself and us. But the other rebuked him, saying, Do you not fear God, since you are under the same sentence of condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong. And he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And he said to him, Truly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise.
I was once speaking in a student bar. It was, bars actually sort of overrating it slightly. It was a dingy hole in the ground, really. They called it the beer cellar because that was all there was to it. It was a cellar with some beer in. And that night they'd asked me to speak about Christianity. And I was chatting to quite a number of students, probably 20, 30 students, sticking their hands up, asking questions. And it was all going quite well, and they were, you know, nodding when I answered questions, which is what I hope will happen later on. And then one guy stood up, and he was enormous, huge guy with very dark black hair sort of all over his face, enormous beard. And he stood up and said, I am the most evil man you have ever met. Which was interesting. And then he said, what would God say to me? I don't know what you'd expect me to say. I don't know what you'd thought of to say. As always, on the way home, I thought of several sort of put-downs that would have put him back in his box. At the time, just as it happened, I was working with a few ex-offenders. So I was working with people who'd spent some serious amounts of time in prison with a few had been in for GBH, at least one rapist, I think. Basically, this guy was probably, he was a French literature student or something, wasn't he, with the ideas above his station. Could have said that. But I'm the most evil man you've ever met. I couldn't think of something like that to say, so I just took him seriously and said what I think the Bible would say. What would God say to you? God would say, I love you. I love you and I want to forgive you and welcome you. I think we'll see that in our passage. Open up that reading we just had. I don't know if it's the answer you'd expect. I don't know if you think it's the wrong answer, that God shouldn't love evil people. Our title this evening is How Bad Is Too Bad? How bad do you have to be to go beyond the people God can love, beyond the people who go to heaven? It's a question that Luke's really interested in. Both our readings tonight are interested in that. In our first reading, there's a good person and a bad person in a kind of playoff between top of the table, bottom of the table. Today it is the two characters from the bottom of the table. If you're into football, that's quite appropriate today, isn't it? But you had two people who'd been the worst they could be. And let me read to you a bit about them. The second paragraph on our sheet. Two others, who were criminals, were led away to be put to death with him. And the fact that they're criminals and they're being executed tells you everything you need to know about them. That they're very serious wrongdoers. They're probably traitors or murderers. So that's sort of people they crucified, real evil types. But when they came to the place that is called the Skull, there they crucified him, Jesus, and the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. These two guys, they spend 6 hours either side of Jesus. An amazing break. They spend the last 6 hours of their lives with the only person who could put a word in for them with God, if he wanted to. He's nailed to a bit of wood. He can't move. They spend 6 hours with him. And by the end of the story, look at the very last thing we read. He said to him, "Truly I say to you, today you'll be with me in paradise." You've got to want to know what made the difference, don't you? Between these evil criminals who begin to one of them at the end going to paradise. Two evil people, one of them gets in, the other doesn't. I don't know what sort of questions you might have. How is it fair if even one of them gets in? Well, how does God decide? What makes the difference? And the answer to all of that is the death of Jesus. That's what makes the difference. If you understand that, then everything else makes sense. Jesus' life is all about his death. That's unusual, isn't it? From chapter 9 in Luke's Gospel, he begins walking to his death. We're in chapter 23 in our reading. So we've had chapter after chapter of Jesus on his way to die. And in our verses we had read, there are two ways of understanding that. Two ways of understanding his death. The first way is the purely human way. The first criminal, top of the second page, he railed at him, saying, "Are you not the Christ?" That's the human view. Aren't you the Christ? The first criminal, he looks at Jesus, who is naked and flogged and abandoned and dying. He says, didn't you say you were the Christ, God's King? This proves that you are lying. If anything ever could, this death proves you're lying. Save yourself and us. Ho, ho, ho. Here's a truth about Jesus. If you see him as a human being, do not respect him. If you see him as just a human being, do not respect him. If you like him, then you'll see earlier in the passage there are some people weeping and mourning for him. If you like him, be sad about his early death. If you don't like him, well, it's all over the passage. They scoff at him, they mock him, and this criminal, even this dying man, takes time out when it's hard to breathe to mock him. Nobody who met Jesus respected him, but disagreed with him. Kind of honoured him, but thought, "I don't quite see it your way, Jesus." The first century eyewitness view that we've got here is you either worship him as God, or you see him as a human being and you weep or you mock, depending what you make of him. He's a human failure. Well, the first criminal's got no doubts at all. He relieves his own disappointments by ranting at Jesus. That's the human view. Second, there's God's view. God's view is that he saves others by not saving himself. Let me say that again. He saves others by not saving himself. That's in the passage. The criminal isn't the only one who thinks it's funny. There are other people who spot that Jesus offered to save people during his life. But now he's the one who needs a saviour pretty desperately. So look what the rulers said, middle of the bottom paragraph. The rulers scoffed at him, saying, "He saved others. Let him save himself, if he is the Christ of God, his chosen one." It's a pretty smart thing to say to a dying man. But actually it is the most stupid, most ironic thing ever said, probably in the history of the world. He saved others, let him save himself. Do you see? Do you see what's stupid about that? The question is, which one do they want him to do? He saved others, let him save himself. Which do they want? Jesus could save himself really easily. This is a man who has brought people back to dead, who has told storms to shut up and sit down. This is a man who says he has an army of angels at his command. He could save himself really easily. But if he does that, he cannot save other people. That's his choice. Save others or save himself. They need to choose. Which one do they want him to do? That's God's view of the cross. To save others, he has to refuse to save himself. He has to die. That explains, doesn't it, why his life's all about that. Explains why you walk from chapter 9 to chapter 23 all the way to a painful cross. It's deliberate. And I want to read you Jesus' own understanding, own explanation of his death. It means going back a page in Luke, which if you want to check it, you could pick up the Bibles and check that, but I'll read it to you. This is from the night before he died. Luke 22, verse 37. Jesus the night before says, "For I tell you that this scripture must be fulfilled in me. And he was numbered with the transgressors. For what is written about me has its fulfillment." And that is coming true as we read about his death. He's numbered with the transgressors. There's one nailed either side of him. But if you read the full quotes, it's an amazing thing for Jesus to say is about himself. It's from the book of Isaiah, 700 years or so before Jesus lived. Here's the full verse. I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoil with the strong. He's done something amazing, in other words, because he poured out his life unto death and was numbered with the transgressors. And that's what Jesus says is happening to me. And why is it happening? The verse goes on in the Old Testament. For he bore the sin of many. That is the heart of Jesus' life and mission and death. If you don't understand that, you understand nothing about Christianity and nothing about what Jesus has to say to this criminal. The most evil man you've ever met, what would God say to him? He'd say, I love you, I want to forgive you and welcome you, and I can because Jesus will bear the sin of many. I can because Jesus will bear the sin of you if you'll have him. I want you to feel the depth of what Jesus has done, the Bible's claim. I want to show you that slightly stupidly with two DVDs. This is trying to represent Jesus and me, so I had a bit of a struggle picking them off the shelf. But roughly, maybe this is Jesus, if you think that's appropriate or not. It's Jason Bourne there. So Jesus, the kind of hero saviour. And it was tricky finding one for me. Maybe Anchorman would do, the sort of idiot on there. But if you imagine, instead of two slightly tragic films, they're both serious documentaries about the lives of two people. One of them about Jesus of Nazareth, and one of them about me. And one of them would be much more interesting than the other, but both, to me at least, would have a certain interest. And Jesus' record, Jesus' DVD, would have on it an amazing life. A life where he always did what his father wanted him to do, always did what God wanted him to do. The night before he died, he's in tears, saying, Father, do you really want me to die? And even then, he says, yes, I will. I will do that. Always loving, always kind, always strong, always generous, always fair, always good. And the other DVD, the one about me, would be very different. Jesus asks us to evaluate our lives on a standard that goes like this. He says, have you loved the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength? And have you loved your neighbor as yourself? And the challenge there is that those kind of go all the way, don't they, those commands. I guess I love God occasionally, not with all my heart. And I love my neighbor occasionally, but not the way I love myself. And if you were to look at my DVD, maybe you assume that because I'm standing up here, maybe you assume that that means someone has kind of carefully weeded out everything wrong in my life, and I'm a good person. If we showed this DVD on there, and it showed you my life, if it showed you what I did and thought and said, I would leave this room straight away. And I think probably I would want to leave London and never see any of you again. That is not that I'm a particularly scandalous person, just that we all have secrets, don't we? We all have motives that when we do a good thing even, we know inside what's going on. Two very, very different lives. Here's what the same chapter of Isaiah says. It says, we all like sheep have gone astray. Each of us has turned to his own way, which is definitely me. And the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. Let me see if I can do this without dropping DVDs all over the floor. We all like sheep have gone astray. There's a DVD of a life gone astray compared to Jesus' innocent life. And the Lord has laid on him, here we go, the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all. So that everything I've ever said and done and thought, the Lord God lays onto Jesus Christ. As if now when you pick up Jesus' film and have a look inside, you see a life of consistently letting God down, a shabby life, a life filled with regrets and wrong motives. And when you open up the film of my life, amazingly, you see inside it an amazing life. a life like Jesus, not because that's how I live, not because I deserve that, but because Jesus simply swaps it. That's his understanding of his death. The Lord laid on him, on me, Jesus would say, the iniquity, the evil of us all. Let me tell you some things I think that means. I think there's some amazing consequences. It means that we have real justice here for the evil person. So evil people like me, evil people like the criminal, there's no way you could let them into heaven just as if God didn't care what they'd done. That would be an awful thing. Everyone must be punished. You need to find the person. You need to find a life like that and punish it. And Jesus says, put that DVD inside me and punish me. Real justice has been done. Another consequence, I think, is basic fairness says you cannot punish the same evil deed twice. See, my life is inside Jesus' DVD. And it has been punished. He has died. Had the death penalty. However we feel about some crimes, I don't know, in the news at the moment, you've got Madeleine McCann and you've got terrorism, haven't you? However you feel about the worst of crimes, the worst you can do is the death penalty, isn't it? The worst you can do is kill someone. And that is what has happened to my crimes. That's what happened in Jesus to what I did wrong. And third consequence, it means I get his records. His life. It means that God can look down on my life and say that I did all those good things, which means I am totally free. Don't know if you've ever met a guilt-ridden Christian. If you have, I'm really sorry. It is not meant to be like that at all. God's justice has been faced for me and I am free because he chose not to save himself but to save me instead. Here's a poor illustration. I read about some forest fires in California where there were some people who, something has happened, they'd stupidly said they wouldn't leave, they didn't believe it would happen. They stayed in their houses and they couldn't get them out. But what they could do is send in some firemen to them. So they dropped some firemen with them and they brought with them a special kind of shelter. And the firemen stuck the shelter over them and they all pile into it as the wall of fire approaches and burns across. And the shelter just about lasts long enough. Keep them going inside until the fire has gone by. And it burns in full and they come out the other side in safety. And there's nothing else left to burn around them. The fire can't come back. They're safe now. Now that is a pretty poor illustration because Jesus is so much more than that. I've done wrong and the fire of God's justice, if you want, is on its way to me. And it is like Jesus, without having a shelter, he throws himself on top of me and is burned instead. And when the fire has passed by, Jesus is dead and I am safe. Now, I want to finish by showing you what Luke intends to teach us, which is our third point, one man is saved. I want to leave you in no doubt what you need to do if you want the last verse to be true of you. So open it up again if you've closed it. And just look at what this man says. So the first criminal, he takes the human view. He says, what a joke. The second criminal faces up to two things that I suggest to you are true about everybody in this room. But please feel free to ask questions if you think it's not you. He faces reality, first of all, about himself. He realizes where he is. Do you not fear God since you're under the same sentence of condemnation? He realizes he's on death row. He's about to meet his maker. And he says, we indeed justly, for we are receiving the due reward of our deeds. That is unusual frankness and honesty, isn't it? To say that death and execution is what I deserve for my deeds. He says, yeah, I've got a bad life record, bad DVD. I deserve death. Now, that is a very hard thing for many people to say. The kind of people who are horrified by the answer I gave to that student in the bar, the sort of good person, may be working out what the logic of this all means and may be horrified. If Jesus' death is a swap, and that means that he dies for many, then that has to mean he died for anybody. So let's see how bad we can make this. Osama bin Laden has been in the news, hasn't he? And there is no reason, as far as I know, to think that he followed this criminal and became a Christian and asked Jesus for forgiveness. But yes, you have to say, he could have gone to heaven. He could have been in. I don't know whether you rejoiced at his death or not. From a Christian perspective, that is a man with blood on his hands going to meet his maker. What the criminal here recognizes, don't you fear God, since you're under the same sentence. And he is also someone who faced his maker trying to earn his way to God. Actually trying to do it in the most awful way imaginable, through the killing of other creatures that God made. But if he had followed this criminal, he's not too bad. If it's a swap, if you just take out one life and you put in a different one, then shockingly, nobody is too bad. And that is a very hard thing for us to understand, particularly if you too are trying to earn your approval from society or from God. To say that actually anybody, how bad is too bad? It's not possible to be too bad. And to admit, verse 41, that actually, with all the good things in my life, still, death would be the right due reward for my deeds. That's the first thing he does, the reality about himself. Then the second thing is the reality about Jesus. So he says, we're receiving due rewards, but this man has done nothing wrong. He recognizes he's in the situation that Isaiah verse talked about. He is next to a man who has done nothing wrong. He's innocent. All the way through the chapter, on the way to Jesus' death, people keep saying he's innocent. Pilate, the Roman governor who's in charge, says three times, you're innocent. And yet still he dies. Recognizes he's innocent, and then he says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Recognizes that Jesus is a king. And that is an impressive thing to say, isn't it? People often say it must have been really easy to be a Christian back when Jesus was around, and now it's really difficult. Well, we say that with the whole of Jesus' life laid out for us, with the resurrection that happened after this death, to say Jesus is not a failure, and he really is king. But this man, it was never harder to believe, was it, than on that day when he pledged his loyalty next to a naked, bleeding failure. As he said, be my king. Gives his life to Jesus. No fingers crossed there from him. And he asks for a place in that kingdom. It's very bold, isn't it? He's on death row. He's a marked man. He's a criminal. He says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. And Jesus does not hesitate. The last verse, Jesus said to him, truly I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. How? Well, how not if Jesus has swapped places with him? Luke includes him as an example low point, isn't it? You know, Mr. Evil in the student bar or whatever you imagine, maybe that Christians would say about your life in judgment. If you're not worse than him, then anybody can be saved. If Jesus can say that without hesitation to an executed dying man, then anybody can be saved. And notice he doesn't do any good deeds to make up for his bad life. He spends his entire Christian life nailed to a piece of wood like this, which lasts probably another hour or so. He never reads the Bible. He never helps old ladies across the road. He never does anything. But Jesus says, you are definitely going to heaven. Who does Luke present as the first person to benefit from Jesus' death? It is the man on the spot that day, that evil criminal who Jesus met. And just to tell you briefly before we finish how this struck me individually. I wasn't the evil man, I think. I grew up very religious and churchy. And my main emotion to this was anger, not joy. Because you see what it does? It says none of us, good or bad, have any hope on our own. None of the good things I do are any use to me. But no matter how bad you've been, you can be forgiven. And it took me 3 months to realize that I really was someone who needed forgiving. But then once I did, this was the most fantastic thing I ever got hold of. And I said something very like what the criminal said. I basically said, I was a child at the time, but I said, I've messed up my life. Jesus, please come and run it better. I deserve death. Be my king. And anybody who'd say something like that, take the sheets away, keep with you what the criminal says. Anyone who'd say something like that, you have it from the horse's mouth, from Jesus himself, what he would say, his promise. Truly I say to you today, and the day you die, you will be with me in paradise.